Yes, Angela. Yeah, that's a blessing. Blessing. Anyone else? All right, well, keep those things in prayer this week, and we'll go ahead and get started. We ended up last week on investing, and I had a couple more points I wanted to make before we moved on from that. You know, we talked about, and we read the verses in Proverbs about, you know, giving an inheritance or blessing your children's children. So, moving on, and I guess the only thing he cautions about, and I wanted to kind of relook at that is that, you know, obviously we want to give good things to our kids. So I don't want to, you know, lower that any, but he does caution that we need to be careful that we don't give them so much that they become independent and then they don't trust God. And so we just want to be careful about that. Like I say, we want to give them good things, but we also don't want them to not still, you know, like, well, I don't even need to work now. I've got all this money my parents gave me. I don't have to work. Or so, because we need to be, you know, they need to be continue to do that. And like I say, you don't want to just make them have so much to where they're where God's out of the picture. You know that they have more than enough. So, and that applies for us too, is that we need to be cautious of that. So, and then he talks about, you know, giving now or leaving it to good causes when we die. And he makes the statement, and I thought it was good. He says, passages relating to reward indicate that rewards in heaven are given for acts of faith we actually do while on earth. I thought that was a great statement. And, you know, leaving instructions for others, what others are to do with money which was once ours, is not the same as giving it away while we're still alive. And he quotes, death isn't your best opportunity to give, it's the end. It's the end of your opportunity to give, because you're not gonna be given it when you after your death, like we've talked before. You can't take it with you, so you can send it ahead. That's the one phrase I hope you remember from this lesson is that you can't take it with you, but you can send it ahead. So. He said it's good to distribute part of of his estate to God's work, but it doesn't require faith or sacrifice. Giving is voluntarily parting with an asset, and as I said, we have no choice but to leave money behind when we die. So designating where it goes, it's wise, but it's not necessarily sacrificial. And then he talks about, you know, if you are going to give if you are going to give part of your inheritance to some type of a cause, like to the church or to some paraministry, Well, first of all, as far as investments and inheritance, be sure investments, you know, we need to make wise decisions. And he talked about this. I don't know if we discussed it or, but it's a little tougher with today's environment with mutual funds and things like that, you know, making sure that, you know, you're investing in moral, you know, moral types of companies and that type of thing. But, you know, you need to get a good investor that's a Christian. And then he also talked about the fact that as far as inheritance, if you decide to give one of those different ministries, first of all, you need to make sure it's a ministry that's, you know, that's sound and it's good. There's a lot of charlatans out there, as we all well know. So we need to do our research and make sure that money we're giving to one of those is going to be well used. And then the other point he makes, and I think this is good, your kids need to know what you're doing so that they don't get caught by surprise. So you need to sit down with them and discuss that with them. If you're going to give part of your inheritance to some cause like that, they need to be aware of it. Most likely they're going to, I mean, if you've raised them as you should, they're going to praise the Lord. But he does make the statement, and I think it is good, if you decide to give part of something, part of your what you've have to those that you need to sit down, and then you need to give them the opportunity to come back with feedback. They may have, you know, they may have feedback that is important. So anyway, we'll move on from that. So the next section is passing the baton of wise stewardship, and the title of the next chapter is the teaching children how to manage God's money and possessions. And he makes a statement: everything learned in life, from coping methods to table manners, is learned in families. And he says, families are the heart and soul of society. The home, not the school, is the primary place of learning. Home is where character is built, habits are developed, and destinies forged. And we won't turn there. You guys all know, you're familiar with the verse that train up a child in the way that he should go, and then when he is old, he will not depart from it. And he mentions that verse. And he makes the statement that children imitate everything we do. And I thought this was a good statement. Sometimes they fail to listen. But rarely do they fail to imitate. So, and pastors talked about that. He talked about that not that long ago in one of his messages. Deuteronomy, we know we're familiar with those verses. We'll start there. But Deuteronomy 6 talks about in rearing a child. We'll read those verses. It's good to review them. Chapter 6, verses 6 through 9 says, And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto your children, unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thy hand, and they shall be as the frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house and on the gates, on the post of thy house and on thy gates. And and so we're to be teaching our children. We're to be constantly teaching them God's word. And every experience with money is a teaching opportunity. And some, of course, some lessons are learned the hard way. And, you know, the more children witness wise stewardship practices by their parents, the more natural it will be for them. And we should teach our children to associate money with labor. Money is earned through diligence and effort. And so we need to teach them, you know, that it's associated with labor. And yet, he makes the statement, they shouldn't always be paid for doing chores. That, you know, they should understand that they have responsibilities that they need to do, and they don't need to be rewarded for it. They just need to do them. Teaching productive work ethic is essential, yet it's important they learn to correctly prioritize work and other commitments. In other words, they need to put the things of God first. You know, they shouldn't put work before God. And I know there are some jobs that require, you know, that you have to work on, you know, on Sundays or something like that. And but maybe if it requires you to be work every Sunday, then maybe you need to really and honestly consider, if you're a believer, you need to consider, do I need to be looking for a different job? Young people who are allowed to put other pursuits above church will often live out those same principles as adults. And that's if they aren't too busy to go to church at all. We need to teach children to save. Children learn the value of money and discipline of self-control through saving. For major items, help them develop a plan to work for and save the money to buy it. Then we also need to help them to learn to be generous givers and not keepers. You know, how many kids have you had to teach to be selfish? I mean, I think that's a lesson we need to break pretty early as little kids, because it's like, no, that's my toy, you know, and they don't want to share it with other kids that come over to play. And so, so we need to teach them, you know, we need to teach them to be generous givers. And we know what the scripture says, it's more blessed to give than to receive. And so they need to be taught that. And if we as parents and grandparents, there's a lot of us older folks in here, if we don't teach children how to give and manage God's money, who will? And it's, read a verse in Ephesians. You're familiar with it, but we'll turn over there and read it real quick. Ephesians 6:4 says, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." And and he makes this statement too, and I thought it was good. He says, "For those who say we shouldn't require our children to give," he says that makes no more sense than to not make your children wash their hands before a meal, or to put on a coat when it's cold outside, to go outside, put on a coat. And he also says that, you know, those who say that giving must be from the heart, not imposed by someone else, the response to that would be that, you know, giving is a habit. And like all good habits, it can be cultivated. And and as far as also teaching stewardship, he mentions, and we looked at that way back in, I think, chapter 7, it was mentioned about taking a trip to the dump and fighting, you know, the sin of materialism. And then, of course, you know, get involved in giving to special missions projects. That's another way, as a family, you can get involved in that and teach kids to, you know, to give. And then he talks about you know, teaching self-control. He states that self-control is one of the highest Christian values. And we know over in Galatians, in Galatians 5, where it talks about the fruit of the Spirit, and talks about love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance, which there against such there is no law. So we need to teach our kids self-control. And then sometimes we do say yes. Because when we do say yes as parents, that also teaches again generosity and not tight-fistedness, which is as negative as overindulgence. A parent, I want to make sure I added in some stuff. I don't want to get it out of sequence. It's a parent's purpose is not to give food, shelter, and clothing the first 20 years, but to one day present to the Lord, the church, and the world mature young adults who are good servants, stewards, and citizens. So talking about teaching them to learn greater responsibility, let me read that again because I kind of chopped it up. A parent's purpose is not to give food and shelter the first 20 years, but to one day present to the Lord, the church and the world, mature young adults who are good servants, good stewards, and good citizens. And as children grow, they need to be gradually be weaned financially. And sometimes, you know, we have to allow them to learn the hard way when they make poor financial decisions or spend impulsively. We already talked about teaching children to share. And we also need to teach them to be thankful. To be thankful for more than just their toys. But, to be thankful for a body that works, a bed to sleep in, a house, the air, the sunshine, and the rain. We need to teach them all to be thankful for all the good things that God gives us. And then he talks about a legacy of godly stewardship. Nothing will interfere more with a child's relationship with God than a life centered on things. Our greatest legacy to our children is to help them to develop their spiritual lives, their hearts for God, and their hearts for God. Says, you know, and then he talks about, you know, inheritance, yes, but the bigger and better job is to leave a legacy of godly wisdom and generosity that's passed on from generation to generation to their grandchildren. We are not just stewards of God's money, but also the children He entrusts to our care. Then he talks about cultivating a culture of stewardship and giving in the church. And he encourages us as Christians that we ought to disciple each other in financial stewardship. And we know the verses, we won't turn there, but the older need to teach the younger. We need to do that. And then in areas of our walk, we need to examine and correct ourselves. Turn over to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 11. I'll read. So Paul here makes the statement that for if we would judge ourselves, we should not be judged. So, right there's a clear example, and we've talked about the fact that one day we're going to stand before the judgment seat of Christ. And so, you know, this is, like I say, in all areas, not just in the area of money, in all areas of our walk, we need to examine and correct ourselves. And then let's turn over to Romans 12 and we'll talk about the spiritual gifts. Romans 12, as we're familiar with this chapter, a great chapter, and of course in verses 1 and 2, that, you know, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And to be not conformed to this world, but to be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And then it goes on down in verse 6, it talks about gifts. It says, having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, whether prophecy, let us prophesy according to the proportion of faith, or ministry, let us wait on our ministering, or he that teaches on teaching, or he that exhorteth exhortation, he that giveth, let him do it with simplicity, he that ruleth with diligence, he that showeth mercy with cheerfulness. So we look at those different spiritual gifts. And I didn't write any of this down. I read it. He made the mention that, you know, we talk about people and we think of, and I can think of several people in this church, and I'm not going to mention any names, but people who are great prayer warriors. And I'm sure you guys all in this crowd can think, sit around here and think of people who are in our church who are great prayer warriors. And he made mention, but you don't hear anybody talk about giving warriors, you know. And so we need to, you know, we need to be giving warriors too. And but anyway, he talks about about the gifts, and we saw there the gift of giving. You know, we all, and maybe you guys know or have you have an idea what your spiritual gift is, and there may be more than one. You know, he says we're called to serve, show mercy, and to give, even if that's not our specific gift. And he talks about, you know, and I heard this mentioned on several different occasions over the weekend at the Christmas on the Bricks. You know, some people have been, I believe truly, have been given the gift of teaching, and people were there that we were visiting with and interacting with, you know, they may have another church home, but they don't have any Wednesday night meetings. And so folks were telling them, hey, we got these kids programs, you know, because most of those had younger children, and we got these kids programs on Wednesday night, and we have this, the pastor's wife, Elizabeth, teaches the young kids, and she's really good. And my wife has said that. I believe Elizabeth is blessed with the gift of teaching. And but I think Elizabeth would also tell you, and this is the reason I make that statement, that how do we learn to teach or lead or give? Now, like I say, God blessed her with that gift, but I'm certain also she also learned by doing, and she learned how to get better by teaching. And so we become givers by giving. And so, you know, that That's learned too. So we become givers by giving. Then he asks, is there too much giving? I mean, an overemphasis on giving. And he makes this statement. He says he doesn't believe, and I would agree with this, he doesn't believe that we're going to stand at the judgment seat and hear Christ say, I have this against you. You gave too much. you know, just as we've talked about in the earlier lessons that, you know, we're not going to get there when we pass away and say, boy, I wish I'd have spent less time with my family. So it's kind of the same deal. you know, Jesus never called anyone a fool for giving too much or keeping too little. He did, as we read, and we won't turn there, but he did in the parable of the rich man. He did call him a fool, and in Luke. So let's turn over. We'll turn over to Luke 16. We'll kind of review there again, because that's the end of it. And I told you we'd finish up today. So turn to Luke. Everybody, turn to Luke chapter 16. And these are kind of the verses we started out with at the very beginning of the book. And I kind of want to close with those. Chapter 16, verse 10 says, he that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. If therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if ye have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. Ye cannot serve God and mammon. So, all right, any comments or statements anybody wants to make before we close? We're going to get done early today, so you're going to have time to fellowship. Yeah.
What is giving with simplicity?
Giving with simplicity. Did I make that statement?
Well, I was not.
Oh, yeah. I guess this is what I think. You may disagree. I think it's not knowing what the left hand and the right hand are doing. Does that make sense? In other words, yeah, I don't think it necessarily needs to be. And he talked about that some. I didn't bring it up, you know, about, you know, how much should we talk about what we give? And we talked about that several weeks ago. I don't know, you know, I don't know what any of you guys do as far as your giving. And I think that's how it should be. You know, that's between you and the Lord. He made the statement, on the other hand, you know, sometimes we need to make, maybe we don't want to brag about what we're given. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say? But yeah, we do want to, I talked about the older teaching the younger. We do want to be, you know, we do want to be an example. But we just need to be careful. But I guess that would be giving in simplicity. I guess that would be my thought. I didn't look at any commentaries or anything to see if anybody had anything different about it. I didn't think about that. I mean, we can check on that. But yeah, Dwayne. Yeah, I think we should. I think, you know, two flesh are made one. You know, I think you need to, I think they need to, it needs to be discussed. It needs to be agreed upon. It'll prevent a whole bunch of other myriad of problems that can come up. Just like spending, we talked about that. Big purchases, they need to be discussed. I can tell a story I hate to because it's bad. It's bad. I'll tell it because we got a little bit of time. So back in the early days, you know, when you didn't have nothing, of course, you know, all know I love sports. Played a lot of softball. We didn't have a whole lot of money, of course. And I went and I thought I needed a new pair of softball cleats. So I went and bought them, which, you know, they were probably, I don't know, maybe 30, 40 bucks. But 30, 40 bucks back then was a lot of money for us because we just, you know, we were living paycheck to paycheck. I've already told you about my woes of, you know, paying 15% on a $5,000 mobile home. So, but 15% interest. But anyway, my wife was not happy when she found out I'd spent that money because I hadn't talked to her about it. So it was a good lesson learned. I mean, you know, it created a little bit of turmoil, but it was a good lesson learned. So anyway, so all right, any other thoughts or comments? All right, Lord bless you guys. That concludes our study on managing God's money. Hope it's been helpful to you.